You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Scott Weddle. This is the Daily Local News for Wednesday, June 14th, 2017.
Everybody thinks you can pinpoint a cell phone. No, you can't. That is one of the biggest challenges a public safety dispatcher deals with today.
Monroe County looking to reduce response times for emergency calls. More up on that later in the show.
Also coming up in the next half hour, a new edition of our consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware. But first, your daily headlines.
South Bend Mayor Pete Buttigieg has appeared this morning in Bloomington at a meet and greet in a private home and spoke to an array of veteran county Democratic Party figures. Buttigieg has been described by Los Angeles Mayor Eric Garcetti as the, quote, future of the Democratic Party, end quote. He earned national recognition when he ran for Democratic National Committee chair this past winter, calling for the party to appeal to millennials and get back to its roots, representing the middle class and labor. Buttigieg spoke of South Bend when it was the home of the Studebaker Auto Manufacturing Plant. And when Studebaker closed down in 1967, South Bend's economy collapsed.
The real wake-up call came when Newsweek showed up in town with an article saying we were one of America's 10 dying cities. And that may have been the best thing that ever happened to us, because it provoked a real conversation about how we were going to make sure that we were a city that was going to make it. Mm-hmm. And what I'm very proud of when it comes to our community, 6 years later, having entered the race that same week that article came out, is that we're seeing our fastest population growth in a quarter of a century. We've seen tens of millions of dollars of investment in the heart of our city and in our neighborhoods, especially our most economically disadvantaged neighborhoods. We've been able to address more than 1,000 vacant and abandoned houses.
Buttigieg said real change in the country's direction must come locally, or in his words, quote, close to the earth. He cited his administration's successes in revitalizing the downtown area of South Bend and attracting IT and manufacturing businesses to the city. Much of this work was done through local initiative with the help of a Democratic administration in Washington that often remembered its roots.
We're increasingly fixated on the show in Washington because, like anything grotesque, when you see it, you can't take your eyes off it. And we've got to figure out a way to pay attention as we must to what's going on in our country and yet not lose the ability to articulate what we're for. Because the truth is that our values and our policies have led to a lot of good things.
Buttigieg spoke about Scott County where his mother grew up. County health officials told him that of 4,200 residents in the town of Austin, 600 were participants in the county's needle exchange program.
People need our help. People need our help more than ever. And I don't care who they voted for. And they don't care who Jeff Sessions is. They just want to know that they're going to be okay. And taking care of low-income people, taking care of sick people, and taking care of people who are struggling to make it but can and should and will succeed with the right kind of support.
Asked to comment on his future, Buttigieg says he was quite happy being South Bend's mayor. And several national publications have speculated on his potential as a presidential contender in 2020. Buttigieg also addressed the Bloomington Chamber of Commerce today to hear more of his meet-and-greet talk. Tune in tomorrow for Big Talk, a Thursday feature of the Daily Local News.
A new study from IU's Fairbanks School of Public Health claims to show a significant decrease in hospital admissions as a result of Marion County's public smoking ban. The study specifically looked at the rate of admissions for acute heart attacks before and after the 2005 ban. Between 2007 and 2012, the city of Indianapolis saw an average 25% decrease in heart attack admissions. Professor Yi Wang, the author of the study, drew a direct line between the ban and the reduced rate of myocardial infarction. That's the technical term for an acute heart attack.
So the major finding is that we found that the monthly acute MI infarction admission declined about 20% in Marion County and 25% in the city of Indianapolis after the smoking ban was implemented. And this analysis has been adjusted for all the other factors that might influence smoking and acute myocardial infarction admissions. The conclusion would be that smoking ban appears to be effective in preventing MI admissions in the general population of Indianapolis and Marion County.
Other studies around the country have found similar results from public smoking bans. The benefits are most dramatic among current and former smokers. However, non-smokers also saw a 21% decrease in heart attacks. This is believed to be due to less exposure to secondhand smoke. One curious finding is that every demographic group experienced a drop in heart attacks except for Black women. Wang says more research is needed to determine why that is.
Yeah, this is interesting. We are trying to possibly follow up with the study that we're planning, and we don't have an answer because this is a relatively new finding compared to the other existing literature. So we hope to find out soon.
The study was not able to pin down a direct causal relationship between the smoking ban and heart attack rates, but it did for most common variables. Those include sex, age, race, and socioeconomic status.
The Indiana Institute for Working Families has released a report recommending the removal of barriers that prevent adults from pursuing post-secondary education in various training programs. Now, although Indiana has created academic and training programs to meet workplace demands, this report found many Hoosiers are unable to use the programs. Poverty was the most overarching barrier preventing adults from pursuing further education and training. Poverty contributes to other barriers like food and housing insecurity, with one out of three Hoosiers unable to afford basic living costs. This lack of access to basic needs is a major roadblock to successful completion of higher education. Other barriers influenced by poverty: child care expenses, long working hours, a lack of reliable transportation, and internet access. And researchers say the interconnectedness of these barriers is what makes the problem especially difficult to solve. Ultimately, the report calls for the state, particularly the Commission for Higher Education, Department of Workforce Development and Family and Social Services Administration, to further investigate the barriers and propose policy solutions. The report also urges Governor Eric Holcomb take responsibility to oversee these initiatives.
The Bloomington Monroe County's Emergency Dispatch Center will be upgrading its computer software in an effort to reduce response times to emergency calls. The Monroe County Council last night approved a transfer of funds for the purchases of two software packages. The Communications Director for 911 Dispatch, Jeff Schemmer, said individual dispatchers currently work through a multi-step procedure that can take nearly 2 minutes for each distress call. He says that software, called Locution, would eliminate some of those steps, making for a more efficient operation and faster response times.
So as soon as we have a validated address, as soon as we have a valid incident code, it automatically takes that step out of the dispatcher's hand while we continue to stay on the phone. In the case of the ambulance service, we could be providing the emergency medical dispatch information, gathering additional information. This will go out, and it's actually even an automated voice, so it is telling the fire departments what the call is, so the dispatcher isn't having to do that.
Schemmer estimates dispatchers spend 386 hours a year dispatching fire and emergency services.
With locution, being it's eliminated a lot of the personal steps that the individual takes, we're cutting it down by almost a third, and you'll see those percentages drop down to about 147 hours. So it's knocking on over 30% of the time that we spend dispatching. And basically, as soon as we send it, then we can go on to the next phone call, as opposed to being tied up doing the talking.
Schemmer plans to add a second software called Smart 911 to automate updates to the dispatch center's special needs database. He said the database contains addresses of residents with a variety of special needs from autism to Alzheimer's that first responders need to know about that when responding to a call. Currently, residents can register themselves in the database through the city's website.
We would have a link for people to go to that they can register their information. They get emailed every 6 months that they notice there's not been any activity on that account, and they ask them for updates. So it automatically takes care of that. And where that benefits us is when the person calls in, my phone system will recognize that phone number and associate it with this file, and it pops up and populates that information for the dispatcher.
Schemmer said another aspect of the software will be helpful in responding to calls from vacationers and travelers.
Even better part of it is everybody thinks you can pinpoint a cell phone. No, you can't. That is one of the biggest challenges a public safety dispatcher deals with today. And 80% of our 911 calls are cell phones. When a cell phone call comes in, the first number we usually have that pops up is the cell tower address. Then we have to do what's called a rebid, and that gets us a little bit closer with lat long, but it doesn't provide you the actual street address. Usually people, when they call in, yes, they know what their street address is, but sometimes they can't speak to give us that information. What this would also allow us to do is for people, they could register their cell phone number and associate their home address with that phone number. In the past with landline, all that was taken care of. You dialed 911, I had your name, I had your phone number, I knew which fire department needed to respond based on that, which police department. Cellular, all we get is a callback number.
The council voted to transfer more than $324,000 for the equipment upgrades.
Monroe County Community School Board approved three staff changes in their meeting last night. Clear Creek Elementary School Principal Dr. Deborah Prinkert is being promoted to Director of Elementary Education. Dr. Andrea Mobley has been picked to replace Peggy Chambers as Assistant Superintendent for Human Resources. Chambers is retiring this summer after a decade in the position. Mobley has been serving as Assistant Principal at Bloomington High School North since 2004. Dr. Mark K. Winston will become the new Assistant Superintendent for Curriculum and Instruction. Winston is a graduate of the University of Cincinnati. He comes to MCCSC from the Dayton, Ohio Public School System. The administrator's three-year contracts will begin July 1. Retiring Assistant Superintendent Chambers said she took great pleasure in recommending the staff changes.
Because of the people who are being recommended, they are absolutely outstanding. And, you know, we've all invested a lot, and we wanted to make sure that the people who came in and took our offices were going to continue to build and do great things for children.
In other business, the school board approved selling a strip of land south of Bachelor Middle School to Monroe County. John Kinney, who is slated to be the new director of business operations, presented the offer.
We recommend acceptance of the offer of $223,720 for the purchase of roughly 3 acres of permanent right-of-way and 0.23 acres for temporary right-of-way for the Fullerton Pike expansion.
Director of Building Operations Chris Cioli said the offer was reasonable and he saw no negative impact for the school. The land is expected to be used for a sidewalk and easement.
Monroe County's Rural Transit Assistance Program is applying for $1 million of state and federal grants to support its work. Rural transportation is a service provided by the Area 10 Agency on Aging. It provides transportation on weekdays to residents of Monroe, Lawrence, Owen, and Putnam counties. Chris Myers, the Assistant Director for Area 10 Agency on Aging, says the 30-year-old program relies on support from a variety of sources. Myers spoke last week at a meeting of the Monroe County Commissioners.
It is a federal and state grant that requires, of course, like everything else, a local match to pull those funds down, and those funds are volatile from one year to the other, so we have had to have more in local match to support that, and so we appreciate that the Monroe County Commissioners are willing to increase their match. We also have had quite a bit of increase coming from Owen County, thankfully, and finally. But most of that local match really comes from a lot of partnerships out in the community for organizations like Stone Belt, LARC, Sweet Owen Industries, Putnam County Community or Comprehensive Services. Mm-hmm. We do some Medicaid trips, and so we just kind of really blend together a piecework of funding to try and make this happen.
This year, the county program is allocating $30,000 for the rural transit program. That's up $25,000 from last year. Myers said the grant money would fund operational expenses as well as capital needs.
It's the first year in a long time that they've allowed us to have capital for discretionary, so we're looking to actually upgrade all of the cameras and the 20 buses that don't have upgraded systems. And the cameras are really important for safety purposes and for any kind of accountability on both ends for riders and drivers. We are seeking local funds outside of the Monroe County mm-hmm. government for those, but I just wanted to point that out.
Two rural transit riders spoke to the commissioners in support of the service. Ellettsville resident Esmeralda Wooten said she depended on rural transit to get her to her job at the Indiana Memorial Union. Monroe County resident Veronica Bogan said the service was essential to her life.
I'm a longtime rider of rural transit, and quite frankly, if they weren't there, I'd be dead. I don't drive anymore, so I have no way of getting to the doctor. I have no way to go shopping, and I really depend on these people. So fund them as much as you can so we can keep them.
Myers said rural transit's 29 buses and drivers make more than 120,000 trips each year.
Bloomington City Hall hosted the 6th annual Sustaining Nature in Your Land Day this past weekend. The event is put on by the organization Monroe County Identify and Reduce Invasive Species. The event was intended to educate landowners about creating a resilient native habitat that is void of invasive species. Ellen Jacquart was a volunteer who helped with the event.
We work to help the people of Monroe County be able to identify and control invasive plants on their land. Invasive plants are a huge threat to our forests and our wetlands and our prairies, and we're dedicated to educating people about this threat and providing them with the tools that they need to successfully control invasive plants.
The Purdue Cooperative Extension Service in Monroe County was one of the partners at the event. Amy Thompson is director of the Monroe County Extension.
Invasive species are species that are not native to the United States in general, sometimes also not native to Indiana, but that they invade natural areas and cause economic or environmental harm.
Saturday's event was close to the farmers market, and many shoppers stopped by to see what was happening. A weed lab was set up at the atrium with weed experts answering questions on invasive plants from curious visitors. Phil Oser from Ecologic was one of the weed lab experts at the event.
We've gathered a group of experts in the invasive species field. And we're all here to educate the public about the problems that invasive species pose in our natural areas and what they can do about it to help.
Volunteers walked around the event with garlic mustard, an edible plant which chokes out a lot of invasive species. That was for the visitors to taste. Deep Roots Garden Center also gave away three native shrubs as door prizes for three visitors picked at random from the ballot. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Support for WFHB and the Daily Local News comes from Smithville Fiber, a local provider of internet, voice, and TV service, now also offering home automation and security systems for homes and offices throughout South Central Indiana. More information on Smithville's home automation service is available at smithvillesecurity.com.
Support also comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly consumer watchdog segment, Better Beware.
Welcome to Better Beware. Here's your consumer watchdog from WFHB Community Radio with the latest information and helpful hints designed to keep your head out of the clouds, your feet on the ground, and your money in your pocket.
Here's another in our series of classic scams and swindles. All the con games going around today are variations on a few basic schemes. Learn to recognize the framework of a fraud, and you won't be fooled when fraudsters file off the serial number and give it a coat of fresh paint. The fiddle game is one of those cons that takes a team to work, but this swindle relies on greed rather than fear. This nifty little con is called the fiddle game because of a famous variation where a poorly dressed man runs up a large tab in a fancy restaurant and says he's forgotten his wallet. He says he's a musician and leaves his violin as security while he goes to get it. His partner then arrives, well-dressed, declares the fiddle is a rare and valuable instrument, and offers a lot of money, which he will have to go and get. When the alleged musician returns, the sucker, if he's greedy enough, tears up the restaurant tab and buys the violin from the customer, expecting to sell it to the other person at a nice profit. And, of course, the second person never shows up, because he's meeting the musician and splitting the take. The victim eventually discovers he's paid a small fortune for a very cheap fiddle. Then there's the glim dropper. The what? The glim dropper, a two-person scam that can work nicely if one of the con artists happens to have only one eye. The one-eyed person goes into a store or a restaurant and pretends to have lost a glass eye. The place is searched, the missing prosthetic is not found, and the one-eyed fraudster offers a large reward, like maybe $1,000. Later, the second swindler shows up and pretends to find the glass eye. The sucker, with visions of that big reward dancing in front of his eyes, offers the finder money, say $100, for the glass eye. The finder then bargains the price up to perhaps $250, takes the money, and naturally, the victim never sees either of the two con artists again. These same scams work just as well with false teeth, jewelry, or any object that might be valuable. The con relies on the victim being willing to shell out some money in hopes of making more and believing that there isn't any risk in doing so because he thinks his profit has already been promised and believes the person he's getting money from has no connection with the person he's giving money to. Teamwork, especially when it's kept secret from the victims, is a key element in lots of scams. It doesn't take a room full of people. Just two can work a lot of dandy little cons once they set their sights on somebody with enough greed in their heart to take the bait. I'm Richard Fish for WFHB News and Public Affairs.
Better Beware comes to you from WFHB Bloomington, Indiana. Find all our episodes at wfhb.org. If you can help put the kibosh on a con, email beware@wfhb.org. Remember, swindlers never give a sucker an even break.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Michael Glob, Jared Dill, Maggie Bull, and Arjun Balasundaram, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, in partnership with Community Access Television Services. Better Beware was produced by Richard Fish.
Our engineer today is Dan Withard. Our theme music provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer Joe Crawford for WFHB. This is Scott Weddle.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. Recognized as among the best newscasts in 2016 by the Indiana chapter of the Society of Professional Journalists.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. Send inquiries to news@wfhb.org. And stay tuned for Standing Room Only, our award-winning weekly lecture series coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.